Hello and welcome to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. My name is Peter Bean, and I'll be your host. Joining me today is Andrew Hendricks. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing very well, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
All right. We also have Bob Elliott. How's it going, Bob?
Good. How are you doing, Peter?
Fantastic. So today we're going to do our 2014 kickoff to kick off our new season of the podcast. We're going to be talking about a bunch of different topics, from the Blue Jays and their position in the AL East, their offseason. We're also going to be talking about the 2014 draft, a little bit about the Hall of Fame, and some thoughts on replay. Before we get started, though, Andrew would like to make an announcement. Andrew, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody what's going on?
Thank you, Peter. I'm making a run at the 2014 MLB Fan Cave. I believe that I was inspired by the success that April had last year, and I think I would like to pick off where she left off and really show the people that there's a lot of passionate baseball fans in Canada and across this great country, both from a Toronto Blue Jays perspective as well as just Canadians in baseball. I would really like to cover those as well if I were to get the opportunity to represent Canada again in the Fan Cave. So I'm excited. I've been keeping it fairly quiet. I haven't told that many people. Kind of keeping it, you know, very low key just so I can kind of surprise people with it. And hopefully it's all going to work out. I'm really excited for the opportunity.
Now, did you talk to April to get some advice about the process?
I did. You know, it was ironic. I messaged her, I think it was in September. She was still there. And she got back to me really quick. She's great with that. And ironically, the day that I messaged her is when they started putting the application online, the same day. And I didn't think about that. I just noticed that they had started tweeting it roughly, you know, 3 or 4 hours after I'd asked her. So I thought maybe that was a sign. But no, she was extremely helpful. She gave me some pointers. She told me what the experience is like. All these things that just got me that much more excited for the opportunity and just made me want to work that much harder to get there, because really it sounds like a dream come true. It sounds like something I'd really enjoy doing.
Well, we wish you the best of luck. The whole network's behind you. And if anybody wants to read up about Andrew's quest for the Fan Cave, you can check back on the site, because we'll have lots of updates on that.
I'd appreciate that.
All right, let's get talking about the Blue Jays. The first thing I want to ask you both, and I'll start with you, Bob, give me your rundown on the offseason so far and the activity or lack thereof for our Toronto Blue Jays.
Well, I don't know if I can remember all the acquisitions to start off with, but they really haven't done that much. I mean, they've got Aaron Civia's gone to Texas. They non-tendered him, and Dina Navarro is going to be the catch the majority of the time, and they're still looking for pitching as we speak now. Matt Garza is off the market, so they're interested in Irvin Santana and Ubaldo Jimenez, but so are about 25 other teams. So it's far from a slam dunk as to which way they, whether they go A or B or whether they get either, you know. So they've got some ground to make up.
Andrew, what do you think about the off season so far?
You know what, Peter? I think in the off season last year, so 2012, 2013, I think us Blue Jay fans were surprised. And quite honestly, I think we were a little spoiled. There was definitely the element that it felt as if we could go out and sign anybody who was out there. I think we pretty much did that. We built what many people are calling was a fantasy league roster. And to be honest with you, it was. It didn't work out the way we wanted it to. That's okay. I think this team was built, you know, under the basis that it was going to be a 3 to 4 year plan. I think we still have the tools to do it. I definitely think they can add a thing here and there. And we certainly did. We added Navarro, which automatically makes us a better team just from a fundamental standpoint, I find. And that's no flag on JP and Sevilla, but it's just, I think Navarro may be able to offer a little bit more than Aaron Sevilla did. Again, this is a guy who's been spotty throughout his career. He's coming off of a great season in Chicago. I think he hopefully found something. I think the Blue Jays think he found something, maybe a little bit of a return to the form that he was with when he had that great season with Tampa Bay. Like you guys said, we really haven't done that much. We've signed some minor leagues, or some minor leaguers, rather. I like the competition idea for the second base position. I think Chris Getz could be a little bit better than most people are slating him to be right now. I think maybe there's something left in the tank there. Maybe there's something Seitzer, our new hitting coach, will be able to get out of him. Who knows? As far as the pitchers go, it looks right now to be a two-horse race, really. But like Bob said, we're in it with everybody else in the major league. Who knows where it's going to end up, to be honest with you. I mean, I think Santana may be a safer pick. I think Jimenez may be, you know, a higher ceiling and more of an upside type of player. To look at the basics, these guys are both a couple of guys from the Dominican. We know that's going to gel well with the team, the way we have our core fundamental guys in the Blue Jay system right now. They're pretty much, the majority of them are Dominican, so we know that bodes well for us. It's hard to say. It really is. I think they need at least one pitcher. I think things are a little shaky. I was having a conversation today with a guy about Jay Happ. I think Jay Happ's a better pitcher than everybody gives him a lot of credit for. I think I looked up the numbers. It was like 12 out of his 18 starts. He only allowed three or few runs. I mean, again, it's the pitch count problem. So there's that question mark. I think the pitching is obviously the biggest concern. Then you have second base with Ryan Goins. Who knows what he's going to produce next year? Who knows if Getz is going to come up and kind of take that role? Maybe Goins go down, get a little bit more season, maybe learn how to hit left-handed pitching a little bit better. Who knows? But as it sits right now, and maybe it's because I've been a fan of this team my entire life, I'm not that concerned. I'm kind of hopelessly optimistic, as I've always been, but I still believe in the core of players that the front office staff put together last year. I think they're going to rebound this year, and I think they're going to give they at least a little bit of a run for its money. But again, this is the fan in me speaking, so who knows?
Okay, I want to focus in on pitching, Bob, and I wanted to ask you specifically about the potential of standing pat. I personally believe when the first pitch is thrown on opening day that there won't be any new starters on this team. I think that this team is going to stand pat and go with the guys that they have. Going through the ones that we do have or that they do have, what's going to happen with who do you think is going to make those fill out those final two spots?
Well, the difference I see between right now and a year ago is a year ago they had Dickey, Morrow, Burley, Josh Johnson, and Romero. That was the five going into spring training, and they were all coming off good years except for Johnson and Romero, who was bad. Romero didn't make the rotation, so they flip Happ into it. So now they've got Burley and Dickey coming off 200 inning years, which is good. Neither one of them throw the ball 85 miles an hour, more than 85, rather. And then you've got Morrow coming off, I don't know what he's got, 65 innings or 70 innings, something like that. And you've got Happ, and then, I don't know, is it Redmond, is it Rogers? So I think there's a need. I know they've got, like, other options, but they plan on going it real slow, taking it real slow with Hutchinson coming off Tommy John surgery and Drabek coming off his second Tommy John. So when they were in town for the caravan, Gibbons said that they'd both start at AAA Buffalo. So I don't really see Drabek as a starter. I think the only two guys that I know that have had two Tommy Johns and come back to make it, Jason Fraser and then Scott Matheson, who's pitching in Japan. But it's just so tough on the arm to get up, get down, throw 10 pitches, get ready in a hurry, and then you're in, oh no, never mind, he got out of it, sit down. So I think Drabek could be a long shot for being in somebody you could count on for a lot of innings.
What about the trade market?
That's I was thinking about that when Andrew was talking about the free agents. Yeah, we don't know. Like, I mean, this is why I think they're worse shape today than they were a year ago. Like, well, maybe not a year ago today, but say 14 months ago today, roughly, they had Marciniak, they had Echeverria, they had Nicolino, they had Syndergaard, they had Darnold. They had all these bullets in their holster, and they could use them. I mean, right now they don't have a lot to move. So, I mean, who knows if, like, David Price is available. But who's the second guy available? I don't know. The second best guy available on trade. I don't know who that is. But they certainly could go that route. The Cubs guy, Jeff Smarja, at the winter meetings, there was talk that they wanted both Stroman and Sanchez, and that's an awfully high price to pay for a guy. I think he's a year away from free agency, so, and he's not a number one.
Now that's exactly what I'm thinking. If it takes Stroman and Sanchez to get that guy, what does it take to get Price? And the Jays aren't really even in that market. I don't think they have the players to go after somebody like Price, do they?
Not unless it's Sanchez, Stroman, you know, and 14 other guys, which, like, they don't have, like, Kansas City got Will Myers, got James Shields for Will Myers, who would be the equivalent of Will Myers with the Blue Jays? There isn't one, is there? Whether it's a pitch, maybe, excuse me?
I don't think there is.
No. So, I mean, you know, like, I mean, Kansas City a year ago, they were interested in Erasmus, but not now at $7 million.
So what about Tanaka? Signs with the Yankees over 5 years. Everybody says it's the five-year rule, and that's why they've pulled out or why they pulled out of those negotiations. Is that a mistake? Should they have been more aggressive in that area?
Well, to be honest with you, I think I was having this conversation yesterday. The five-year policy, personally, and I haven't been covering this team half as long or even a quarter as long as you have, Bob, but I do think that this may be kind of a diversion. And let me just explain myself when I say that. I think signing free agents in Toronto is a bit of a tough sell, and I think it's got something to do with the currency, the change, the taxing. I mean, this is just a pipeline idea of mine, but I think if you're to tell somebody that, you know, listen, free agents aren't going to sign in Toronto, they'd be flat out about that, as many people have said. Or you could tell, you can kind of use the excuse, rather, of, say, a five-year deal, that being the tops and everybody's looking for more, plus an option and an out clause and everything. I think it's a little bit easier for the fans to swallow, in a sense, and because then you can look at the Garza deal, which is for 4 years. And why couldn't the Jays have gone out and done something like that? Maybe it's because the market's been a little bit crazy right now. Who knows? But as far as Tanaka goes, he's gonna take the best offer. And quite frankly, again, if we're going to buy into the fact that it's a five-year deal, then he's not going to take that. He's going to take more money with the Yankees, who's going to give him a five-year with an opt-out, I guess, so he can hit the free agent market again. I'm not sure. Quite honestly, I'm not that concerned with the fact that they didn't sign Tanaka. This is a guy who's unproven. Sure, he went 24-0 over in his league last year, but really, at the end of the day, he hasn't thrown a pitch at the major league level. And to be compared to a guy like Felix Hernandez as far as salary goes, I quite honestly, I think it's a little absurd. And I'm glad that the Blue Jays stayed away from that market, because that's a big, big risk. You're tying up a lot of money. I think the Yankees tied up a lot of money. They can afford to do that. I'm not quite sure if we can afford to do that. And generally speaking, it's not a very big concern for myself.
I agree with you there, Andrew. I mean, I remember talking to Marty Brown when he managed over there, and he'd say they'd go on a 4 or 5 day road trip, and they wouldn't even take their ace. I said, well, why not? And he says, well, he said, because he said he would just be the ace would pitch against the other ace on Sundays, which makes his record all the more remarkable. He wasn't facing any fifth starters, so they play fewer games, so they'd go on a road trip. They'd say leave on a Monday, come back on a Friday or something. So he would just stay at home, work out with the trainers, and then he would pitch the Sunday game. So they play fewer games. They throw a different ball. They're not used to the rigors of. I know that's going to sound like an exaggeration or something, but if you're going once every 7 days versus once every 5 days, I would think that's going to be an adjustment come along about June, because Marty Brown had Kuroda his last year before he came out, before he was posted, and what he did, he said, look, he says, if you want to make yourself more attractive, you got to pitch every fifth day, which is what Kuroda did, and then he went to the Dodgers. But this guy, I mean, he's to my knowledge, he went once a week.
Okay, on to catching. I want to circle back onto that for a moment. Did the Blue Jays do enough at that position after having so much potential a year back with Travis d'Arnaud, That personally is something I was very excited about. I think having an offensive catcher, a good offensive catcher who also plays behind the plate well, is a huge plus to a team. It's something that most teams don't get. Do you think we did enough?
Quite honestly, like I said earlier, I think with a guy like Navarro, let's see, you know, he had a great season with Tampa Bay in 2008, and he's coming off, again, a relatively good season with Chicago in a lesser facet, rather. Who knows? Again, I don't think this is definitely the guy that the Blue Jays are going to want to go with. Let's take a look. He's 29 years old. He's not too old, but, you know, he is a catcher. You talk about Darnold, and here's a guy who's been hurt before, and who knows what he's going to do at the major league level. Nobody knows at this point. Quite honestly, it's too early to say. I think the Blue Jays have a guy right now in the system, A.J. Jimenez, who could be, you know, possibly just as good, if not better, than Darnold. I followed him a lot this year. I'm just watching, you know, it's hard to scout a box score, quite honestly. I saw a little bit of video, but I didn't see enough that I could really give a thorough judgment on him. But by all accounts, he looks like a very solid ball player. Definitely a two-way player. He plays, his offense is great. It's good for the catching position. I mean, his defense is phenomenal. His arm, before the injury, and I think a little bit after the injury, I think he showed that he rebounded a little bit. His arm's pretty good. Definitely has a high caught stealing percentage. But again, these are all numbers that are in the minor leagues, and how those are going to transpire to the major leagues, no one knows. And that's the beauty of this game, is that you never know. But as it looks right now, I think Jimenez is a very nice prospect. He's going to start in Double A, I believe. It's probably going to take him a couple of months there. He'll get moved up to Triple A, and who knows? Maybe he'll be up in as early as, you know, July or August, and you never know. How long has it been since we had a player come out of the minor leagues and stick and actually make an impact, you know, immediately? I mean, sure, Lurie had a great year in his first year up, but you know what I mean. I think maybe Jimenez could be that player, but it's tough to say at this point.
Bob. Yeah, you're right. I mean, Delgado came up. He had a great April. He had, with about 4 days ago in April, he had more home runs than singles. And then by the end of May, he was at Syracuse. Sean Green came up and he went down. I'm trying to think of some other guys. It's a difficult game for a reason, because you know, they make, you figure it out, and they make adjustments. Then you got to make the adjustments to the adjustments, and it's not easy to do that.
My biggest concern is that the Blue Jays have two backups. I'm not sure that Navarro can handle the load, the games that they need. And beyond catching Dickey's starts, I'm not sure Tolley is going to produce enough.
Well, Navarro was the reason Martin didn't make the Dodgers. Russell Martin didn't make the Dodgers. And then Martin was the reason that Navarro was traded when Navarro got hurt, and they put Martin in. They won like 24 games out of 30 or something stupid like that. So, I mean, he's more than a backup. He's going to block the ball in the dirt. He might go longer. The time frame between walks might be less than 1 month, as was the case last year. And I think as much as Aaron Civia was good in the community and a good guy, et cetera, et cetera, that was a classic case, I thought, of a guy needing a new change of scenery.
I agree. Big fan of Aaron Civia, and definitely his work in the community. But again, this is a guy that, in his position, he just wasn't producing. And unfortunately, I think he fell into the bad favor with the fans. I think that got to him a little bit. Definitely benefit from a change of scenery. And as far as Navarro goes, who knows? I agree. I think he's a little bit more than a backup catcher. Got into 89 games last season. You know, he had a batting average of .300 with a .365 OBP. I think the on-base percentage, if he could even come even close to that, is something that we haven't seen out of the catching position in some time. And as well as the defensive, you know, behind the ball, I think he's going to do a better job all around, like you said, getting in front of balls, blocking them. I think we're going to see an adjustment there. And I really think that it's going to be a benefit to the Blue Jays to have a guy who, again, maybe is as experienced as Navarro as well, because this is a 10-year vet now. He's been around the league. You know, he was in the American League East at one point. It's different back then. It's tough to say, but I do think that it's definitely a benefit to have him over in Subia heading into the season, and I think it's going to pay dividends for the team.
I got one for you. Who would have been the greatest hitting everyday catcher in the history of the franchise? For an everyday guy, Borders was an everyday guy, but he didn't hit that well. He hit well in the World Series. I mean, Ernie Witt and Buck Martinez were a great combination, but they weren't everyday. I don't know who the – I don't know if they have – you know, the old joke used to be I mean, every team has a weakness at one spot, and the old joke about the Expos was it was a shortstop, and Jim Fanning would always say the greatest shortstop in the history of the Montreal Expos was Condridge Holloway, who played quarterback for the Argos.
Jose Bautista. Bob, I want to ask you about his attitude, whether this is really a thing, whether it's fabricated, you know, by the bloggers or the media. Is this a thing? Is Bautista's attitude a problem? Is there strife in the clubhouse due to him? Has he rubbed the umpires so wrongly that they are, in fact, holding the entire team accountable?
I would say the yes on the umpires. I can remember last spring there was a game. The Yankees came over to Dunedin, and it was a day game, and they were playing it at home at under the lights, a televised game, so they didn't really bring anybody, and it was 9-1 in the bottom of the first, and the catcher backhanded the ball out of the zone, and the guy called strike three on Bautista. And it's spring training. Who cares? He threw down the bat and caused a big scene and everything. And so anyways, the second inning ends, and it's 15-1, and it's a 3-1 pitch to Adam Lind with the bases loaded. The guy reaches outside of the zone, strike two, outside of the zone, strike three. So Lind takes his gloves off, and I can see him. He didn't throw his helmet. He didn't throw his bat or anything. He's just talking to the guy. And I ask him later, I said, what did you say? He says, well, all I said was, I understand what you're doing. And the guy, and the ump said, yeah. He said, they didn't bring any pitching. He says, they're all double-A kids. And Lynn says, but please don't do this to some guy trying to make the team. And so I would say early last year and early the year before, anytime there was a called strike, Bautista didn't help himself with the umpires. Mind you, neither did Laurie when he threw the helmet at Miller 2 years ago, and Escobar was bad 2 years ago. So I think there was something there between the umpires. But I would say after the first 2 months last year, Bautista behaved, and and so did Laurie. But it's a small. What is there? 60 umpires. It doesn't take very long for word to spread amongst them. As for the clubhouse, I have not seen any evidence of that. But the umpires, yes, I've seen evidence that that. Some guys have got a chip. But the one third base coach told me the story. The guy was talking to him. Laurie was fielding ground balls during a pregame, and the third base umpire walked up to him, up to Laurie, and he said, "So, what kind of a person do we have inside that uniform tonight? Are you going to behave, or are you going to act like an idiot?" And so the third base coach, obviously the other team, they went from here, they went to New York, and he bumped into Torrey, and he reported the umpire. He said, that's terrible. That's no. He said he baited the guy before the first pitch. So, I mean, that's the conduct. The third base coach wouldn't tell me who the umpire was. It'd make for a better story if I knew that, but... The thing about the umpires, like whether it was Ricky Henderson or Wade Boggs or whomever, some of those guys, like Pete Rose, if Pete Rose took a pitch, it was ball. Wade Boggs, the same thing. So Bautista is not in that category, Laurie's not in that category, and Escobar wasn't in that category.
I just wonder where it all comes from. I mean, you know, one story of clubhouse strife, fine, okay, it's fabricated. Two, it's fabricated. It's a recurring theme. with this team. There's always some kind of story about clubhouse unity or strife or, you know, team meetings and things like that. And it makes me wonder where this is all coming from.
Well, I can speak a little bit to that, having heard the stories and obviously been around. I mean, I think more recently we're referring to a couple of big ones. As far as the Batista thing goes, the comments he made about mediocrity and it affecting his overall game, I think that was really the low watermark last year. I think
that was towards the umpires, correct?
That's right. That's right. And you can't say that. You can't say that to a professional. These guys have pride the same way Batista has pride. And as unfortunate as it is, I would hate to, you know, see something like, you know, an umpire who's supposed to be, you know, unbiased and not be affected by these things and essentially be bigger than these things. I would hate to see that their reaction come into call. But again, this is baseball. Bad umpiring is just a part of the game as a ball and a bat, really. And, you know, emotions run high. Like I said, these guys play with a lot of pride. So do the umpires. And it could be it's a seesaw battle. But I don't think you can go attacking guys like that, especially not in the press the way he did it. That's to say anything like that behind closed doors is one thing. But to for lack of better words, shoot your mouth off like that in the media just really doesn't help the situation, especially given the reputation that he's built for himself for the past couple of years. As to the clubhouse chemistry, there was a story that surfaced maybe a couple weeks ago now, and it was about Rasmus and how he went in hard at second base like he always does, and he breaking up a double play. I believe it was the Tigers' shortstop that he ended up taking out and injuring, and this was a Dominican guy. And I think as the story went, the Dominican players kind of turned their backs to Rasmus for a little while. They're a little upset with him because they felt like that was one of their guys that he went after. And again, who knows how much of this stuff is true. I think when a team's struggling the way the Blue Jays have for the past, you know, two seasons, let's be honest, it's been a little bit rough. I think people look to point the finger. They look for a scapegoat. And quite honestly, I've called this team the Jays of our lives in the past couple of years because it's like a soap opera. When things go bad, people are going to attack, and they're going to look for anything to kind of stand on as far as that goes. And, you know, sometimes they're going to fabricate some stories. You know, some people are going to do it to cause attention, say, at Twitter or a blog or something. It's a little silly. I think, you know, people only know so much about what happens. Fans only know so much. The media only knows so much. You know, no one can really speak to what goes on in a clubhouse outside of the people who are actually there. And I think they're on a regular basis. It's really hard to say, but who knows? I don't think this team is in any disarray as it stands right now. I think there's a lot of unity. I've always believed that, if anything, losing breeds character. And I think the core of these guys must have a ton of character now, not to slag them or anything, but it's my own personal opinion on the matter.
Switch gears a little bit. John Gibbons, is he the right person to manage this team?
I don't know how he messed up last year. He was a surprise. That was, where they went with his first hiring after Gaston retired. He wanted the general manager wanted a guy with a high ceiling. Now you hear high ceiling used all the time, but usually it's in reference to a shortstop or a player or something. Well, they wanted somebody. They were looking for a manager with a high ceiling, and he could be a guy with what's the word I'm looking for? He could be a general manager someday, Farrell. That's how impressive he talks, and you know, whereas Gibbons is just an old Texican, you know, oh golly gee, you know. But they wanted, so the second hire, they wanted, because of their disagreements with Farrell, or the disagreements between the management and the manager's office, they wanted somebody they were comfortable with, and Antopoulos knew him as from his days as assistant general manager, and that's why they picked him, and I guess they got along. We didn't hear anything about, you know, this was a big, why is this guy on the roster? How come this guy's here? Like we used to hear when Tosca was working for, or Buck was working for J.P. Ricciardi.
What do you think, Andrew?
Personally, I agree with what Bob just said. I think this is a guy that Anthopoulos was comfortable with. There's rumors surrounding this. Is Gibbons a guy that's not going to, you know, question so much because he's a little bit more of a low-profile signing? So he's just going to say whatever the organization, he's going to do whatever they want him to do as far as playing the team a certain way. I don't read into that too much. I think it's still the manager's call. The biggest question when it comes to kind of judging the way a manager is with a team, and it's hard to do. It really is, because to an extent, these lineups kind of write themselves, in a sense. I think you can look at a couple of things. I think you can look at clubhouse chemistry, which could be a question mark, quite frankly, at this point. Does he have control of the clubhouse? Does he have the respect of the clubhouse? Both questions that at this point I don't know if I could really answer. And I think the second one is how he manages his bullpen. And I think that's just the most tangible, the one thing that you can look at on a sheet and really, you know, kind of put together and kind of see how it correlates to his management style. And he was great with the bullpen more or less when he was here the first time. And we had an excellent bullpen for, you know, about half the season, three quarters of the season, until they got completely gassed out due to a lack of starting pitching. So how do you rate it? It's tough to say. It really is, but I have faith. I mean, again, I have faith. But I think given the way things are shaken out, maybe there will be a bit of an attitude adjustment from him as a manager. I know he talked about making the guys work harder in spring training, just in some media scrums he's done since the end of the season. I guess we'll have to wait and find out, but I don't see any issue with having him as the Blue Jays manager in 2014.
How long is his leash? Let's say it doesn't go well.
It'll be a short one. If they open against Tampa, then the Yankees, then they open at home against the Yankees. I don't know who's next, but I mean, if they go 1-3 against Tampa and get swept by the Yankees, I don't know. I mean, it could be May or something, like Gaston. What was Gaston? 12-26, I think, or 12-24 when he was fired in 89. I mean, I think it's a very short leash.
That could be quite comparable to Jimmy Williams. That's right, and I guess John Gibbons too. The first time around, really, when he was relieved, if I remember correctly, it was in Pittsburgh, but it was fairly early in the season. The unfortunate reality of it is the fact that everybody needs a scapegoat, and he who has the highest power generally takes the fall the hardest. So, yeah. If you're right, I mean, if the team does struggle out the gate, and that is a tough way to start your 2014 season, especially in the House of Horrors, otherwise known as Tampa Bay, who knows? But you're right. I can't imagine the leash being that tall, just because I think it's going to get to a point where a move's going to have to be made, and just to settle the seeds a little bit. And who knows what that lies with John Gibbons.
What do the Blue Jays have to do this year for Alex Anthopoulos to be the general manager this time next year?
Well, I think as far as Anthopoulos goes, I feel as if this fan base has certainly turned on him. You look at the fact that in the beginning he was kind of frugal. He was building that farm system. He really sold the fans and the media. He sold everybody on the fact that we were in this, you know, by ourselves. Or sorry, the Blue Jays were in this, you know, kind of by themselves. And they were going to build a farm system, and they were going to use their own assets as opposed to, you know, going the free agent route or anything. I think a lot of people, in a sense, kind of drank the Kool-Aid on that idea.
I know, myself
included. I certainly thought, wow, we have such a great-looking farm system, so many high-ceiling prospects, and, you know, who knows what these guys are going to transpire to. But then, you know, as we know what happened last year, In 2013, the winter of 2013, everything changed. We started flipping these guys, and these guys that you've been sold a bill of goods on for so many years now, and they're gone. And because we went and got guys, you know, who were proven, who have done something in the major leagues. And I think a lot of people weren't prepared for that. People certainly didn't see it coming. I know I certainly didn't see it coming. it happened. But who knows? At the end of the day, I think Anthopoulos went and got guys that, in a sense, you know, were proven at the major league level, and what he traded were prospects who had never done anything at the major league level. Myself, I'm really bad with getting attached to these prospects because I follow them in the minor leagues, and you almost build a relationship with these guys because there's so much hopes and dreams that you can place on a young kid coming up. But the harsh reality of it is he hasn't done anything until he's done it in the show. And who knows what these guys that we've even traded away, a Nicolino, a Darnold, you know, all these guys, who knows what they're going to do because they haven't done it yet. And yet what you got in return were guys that have done it. And look at Jose Reyes, quite obviously one of the premier players in the game. Maybe not as good as he once was, but he's still a premier player in the game. R.A. Dickey had a phenomenal season in 2013. Definitely think he's going to come back and, you know, have a stronger season in 2014. You look at guys like this, and for the most part, who could have predicted what Josh Johnson did last year? It's upsetting, but he did flip minor league guys who, again, and I just reiterate the point, were untested for guys that had worth and had done it in the bigs. So as far as general managing this team, I think people need to get off his case a little bit. I think he went all in. You're right, he did go in all in. It didn't work out, but like I said before, This is a couple-year plan. It's not going to happen overnight. I think it's going to be a lot better for the team in 2014, and I think people are going to tend to get off this guy's case a little bit, for lack of better words.
I tend to agree with you on that. I do believe the Blue Jays will be significantly better this year. I think it's a lot of the same factors experienced by the Dodgers.
Absolutely.
They pulled together a team of veterans and a team of experienced players, albeit maybe a little more high profile than the ones that the Blue Jays did, but still similar scenario, a lot of different people coming in from different places, and they were expected to be pretty good, and they weren't, and it took a little bit of time, and when they finally did pull it together, they excelled, and I see that happening to the Blue Jays. I think that's probable. Same thing with R.A. Dickey. R.A. Dickey is someone I fully expect to come back and have an amazing year. I think with the way that he pitches and the type of pitch that he throws and the methodical nature of his game,
I think he
needed a year to figure it out.
Yep, absolutely. One thing that a lot of people point the finger to last season is that you took a lot of guys that were in the National League and you brought them to the American League. And read into that what you will, but it's obvious that the game is different, especially from a pitcher's standpoint. Having a designated hitter changes a lot. It changes the way you approach innings, you know, obviously at bats. It changes things. It's definitely more difficult to pitch in the American League, and who knows how that's going to shake down, because it certainly did look like Dickey began to make the adjustments and started seeing the rewards. Plus, there's also the theory that he was hurt for a little bit, which he was hurt for a little bit there, and he's pitched through it. So who knows about that? But to blame it all on the general manager, to be honest with you, I don't think it's entirely fair. He's not out there. He's not the one taking ground balls. He's not the one, you know, pitching. He's not going in a three-ball count. He's doing his part, and I think Blue Jay fans can tend to lean off him a little bit at this point.
One thing that keeps coming back to me is, it's a 3 to 4 year plan, depending on how you look at it. I think that's obvious. After the first year not working out, it's pretty easy to say it's a 3 to 4 year plan. This is all in place. Give it another shot. Sure. After the second year, you can't say that. You can't say in year two, well, it's a 3 year plan. No, it's next year is the last year. That's the last chance. So to me, I wonder if even a winning record, but not a playoff spot, would be enough to keep Alex Anthopoulos in that role. I mean, is it playoff or bust, or can this team keep their general manager and not make the playoffs?
I think a lot depends on the attendance, not to sound too much like a bean counter, but if the Blue Jays had been like last in attendance and with 74 wins, I think the manager would have been gone. But even though the team was bad, people still came to see them. And I saw a couple of stories where the guys went into it with the theory, well, these tickets were bought in February and March, and you know, the more and more people they ask, they say, oh, no, we bought them last week, or we bought them last Thursday, you know. So they were, it was entertainment. It was cheap entertainment. It was compared to hockey or compared to the Buffalo Bills or the Reptiles or whatever. But the thing is, if they suffer a big drop-off in attendance, that really is what gathers grab the attention of the people at Rogers. And like I said, like I was going to say earlier, like, so right now the spotlight is on the manager. So if they make a change in the manager, the spotlight is not on the new manager. The spotlight of blame then switches upstairs to the 300 level to the general manager, and he has to turn things around. The thing about the three-year plan is that, was it last year or 2 years ago, Beeson said we'll be in the postseason three of the next 5 years or something like that?
Was that last year?
Last year. So we got one year down on our counter. So, I mean, I don't see this team as being the best in the American League East. So, I mean, I know it was a three-year plan, but the reports, the early returns are not real good. Now, that being said, leaving spring training last year, I remember doing a story, and I think it was 33 scouts or executives I talked to, and who had the least talent in the American League East and who had the most talent. And Toronto had the most, and Boston had the least. So it's not just dumb members of the media that figured that they were going to be a strong team and the Boston was going to be bad. And look what happened.
You're absolutely right. It takes more than stats and, you know, past history to kind of see where a team's going to go. And I think the Boston Red Sox 2013 were a perfect example of a team that rallied behind each other. And I believe that was more of a chemistry team than it was a sheer talent team, similar to the way the 2004 Red Sox were, ironically. However, no, I agree with you. Things could work out differently, absolutely.
Here's a question for you. Who do you guys think is going to be the breakout player on this team this year? The surprise. Who's gonna wow us by the end of the year?
Maybe Anthony Gose. I mean, the thing that I remember talking to the Phillies guys when he was a pup and he had 76 stolen bases was the speed. But what we saw last year and the year before is in his limited time when he gets on base, it's, you know, he has to wait for a 2-0 count or he's waiting for a favorable count. I mean, you know, that's not like Vince Coleman or Maury Wills or those guys. You know, they get on base, boom, first pitch, Tim Raines, Ricky Henderson, they were just gone. So he has the great speed, but I think at the tail end of the year, now whether that was with Mottola and it won't carry over with Seitzer, I'm not sure, but he did show some signs with his bat, and the bat was the thing holding him back. I mean, he can go get him. He's a very good fielder. He throws well. He threw 95 off the mound as a high school senior. That would be my guy. Who you got, Andrew?
I agree with you on account of the fact that Anthony Gose is definitely a guy who's going to come up and one of these days figure it out. Unfortunately for me, I see a little bit of a Travis Snyder syndrome in Anthony Gose on account of the fact that I feel as if there's a lot of pressure put on him. I think the fans, you know, they saw him. When the fans think Anthony Gose, they think Roy Halladay. Now, it didn't happen that way because it wasn't as cut and dry as that. There was a series of trades that were made following that in order to secure Anthony Gose. But I think for the most part, he's playing with the ghost of Roy Halladay behind his shoulder. I think that went to his head a little bit. I think when he didn't start in the MLB last year when he was in Buffalo, even though he knew he was going to do that, I think that went to his head. It definitely went to his production as far as I'm concerned. If I were to pick somebody for 2014 to really wow everybody, and it's without sounding like too much of a homer here, because it is the Canadian Baseball Network, I would have to choose Brett Laurie. I think he grew as a mature player last year. I think when he started slowing things down and we saw some of the plays he was making on the defensive end of the ball, as well as, you know, going up there and not hacking at absolutely everything and being a little bit more selective at the plate, there was about three or four, maybe 5 weeks last season where I think we saw you know, an extended period in which that was the Brett Laurie that I think everybody believes he can be. And, you know, he might just figure that. He may have figured it out last year. I know he cooled off in September a little bit, but I think, you know, having DeRosa in last year to kind of maybe nurture him along in a sense, teach him a few things, I think that helped. And I really think, you know, if he gets out of the box, you know, with a good start this year, no pun intended, I think he's gonna do well. And I think we definitely saw a kid who's about to turn the corner last year. So I'd have to pick Brett Laurie. And again, I'm not trying to be a homer. That's my pick for 2014.
It's okay. I would have had no problem being a homer because I was probably going to choose Brett Laurie as well. And since you did, I'll go with my number two, which I kind of already mentioned. And it's not really a breakout player, more maybe a comeback player, but it'll definitely surprise us. And I think that's R.A. Dickey. I really feel like we're going to get the R.A. Dickey that was traded for this year. It's just he's such a methodical individual. Kind of reminds me of Halliday in that respect, and just the knowledge of the people that he pitched against and how he would use their weaknesses to his advantages. And I just expect to see great things from R.A. Dickey this year.
And we're going to cut it short there. We'll be back with part two of this conversation later this week, where we'll discuss the 2014 draft and the Canadian Baseball Network's 2014 draft list, the Hall of Fame, replay, and a few other topics. If you have any questions for us, please email them to podcast@canadianbaseballnetwork.com, and we'll answer them at the end of part two. Thanks for listening to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. I'm Peter Bean, signing off.